of course, if we are on any kind of position, any kind of position that we are going to be promoting people, we're going to promote people we trust and think that can do the job. And so if we have primarily people in our network who are basically who are homogenous to us, who are like us, because that's how we tend to do our networking. We tend to hang out with people we know and like and have something in common with. If our network is full of homogeneity, we are going to be opening all these doors to people who are homogenous as well and people who are like us.
Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk. I am a career coach for tech managers and CEO of the PeopleStack. My guest for this episode is Karen Catlin. She is an advocate for inclusive workplaces and a coach, speaker, and author. Welcome, Karen.
Oh, hello. Well, thanks so much for having me. This is great.
I am so excited to chat today, Karen. And let's start with what Karen Catlin Consulting is, what you do, and what your mission is with that.
Sure, yes. And I've been doing Karen Catlin Consulting as my second career. And actually, my first career, I spent about 25 years working in the tech industry. I was building product. I started out as a software engineer, and then over time, I moved into program management and people management roles, and then eventually into executive leadership. And most recently, I was a VP of engineering at Adobe Systems. And while I was there and noticing what was happening in our industry, I really firsthand saw this decline in gender diversity in the tech industry. 25 years prior, when I had started my career off right out of college, there were a lot more women, a lot more female computer scientists, and there were a lot more women sitting side by side in the workplaces I was in. And over that 23 years, I noticed this decline happening. So while I was still at Adobe, I started our women's employee resource group. I started mentoring a lot of women and becoming very passionate about helping with gender diversity. So much so that I decided I really wanted to do that full time, and I started my own consulting business to be initially just an advocate for women working in tech. My plan was to do leadership coaching and help women learn skills that would allow them to grow their careers however they wanted to be growing them. So that's what it started. That was originally my mission, was to help as many women as I could. I then started realizing in my consulting practice that there was a theme with a lot of women I was coaching, as well as a theme with myself, and I was noticing how the power of public speaking could really be leveraged to increase visibility and how critical that was for women as well as other underrepresented minorities in the workplace. So I started doing a lot of coaching and teaching on public speaking, and I co-authored a book on the topic, too. It's called Present, the Techie's Guide to Public Speaking. Mm-hmm. So that was a way of me realizing, okay, this isn't just about coaching women. It's about enabling people from all sorts of marginalized groups to get the visibility they really deserved and could use to grow their careers. So that was like phase two. And then I started realizing phase three was all about, like, you know, even though even if I were the most awesome coach and public speaking coach on the planet, there still was a limit to how effective I could be for my clients because they were in workplaces that might not be the best situations, that might not be the most inclusive workplaces, the kinds of places that they just couldn't do their best work because of the environment that they were existing in. And so phase three was pretty much deciding I needed to start advocating for more inclusive workplaces. And what that meant and how that kind of instantiated itself is I started looking into the role that allies play in creating these inclusive workplaces, primarily men, but it's not limited to men. It's just anyone that with any privilege that they have and they possess in the workplace. Like, how can they be allies to create better workplaces where, frankly, everyone can really do their best work and thrive? So that's my current mission, is to continue to coach women, continue to teach public speaking, but really raise awareness of the role of allies.
Got it. So And thank you for that. That's such an, it's an amazing journey. And I love the way that it was, that you framed in terms of stage one, two, and three, that, and often it's kind of 2020 hindsight, right? Where it's like, I may not have planned it that way, but that's,
Of course, I didn't plan it. It was a very organic path I followed, definitely. And in hindsight, it's easy to say, phase one, two, and three, but I had no idea at the time when I was starting this, that that was how it was going
to
play out.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's just really enlightening. To hear that path and what led you there. And so what I want to talk about is being an ally. So let's start at the beginning, because I am going to admit some ignorance around the subject, even though I'm surrounded and watch podcasts and read books and about being an ally and being a better ally in the workplace and just in the world. I'd love to hear, because you are, this is something that's your mission and you want to be an advocate for inclusive workplaces. I'd love to hear your take on it. So what does being an ally mean to you?
Yes, and it can mean so many different things, first of all. But my focus is specifically on being an ally and doing simple things, everyday things that can really make a difference. So that means being an advocate, an amplifier, a sponsor, a mentor, a disruptor at times too. It means standing up for the things that you believe in and that you want to be doing, not just being a bystander and not being aware that, these women in the meeting are always getting interrupted. Maybe I should do something. Not just thinking that, but noticing it and taking action. So my big thing about being an ally is you should take action as an ally, not just not be a bad person, but actually be an upstander for promoting inclusive workplaces. And it doesn't have to be that hard. One of the things I've realized is there are wonderful diversity and inclusion programs that so many companies are embracing and rolling out, but you don't have to be the head of diversity and inclusion for your company to make a difference. You don't have to be on a committee that is focused on diversity and inclusion. You don't have to be the VP of people or the head of HR at your company to make a difference. There's really a role for people at every level to be creating these more inclusive workplaces. And so that's my definition of allyship, is there is something every day that you can be doing that really will make a difference.
Yeah.
And I want to say supplement the great programs that are happening at a broader company level that are often sponsored by HR or diversity and inclusion leaders.
Mm-hmm. Because that's when some really amazing changes can start happening, when it's not just one person, when you can sort of combine your efforts with the company's mission or with other people. But full
Absolutely.
Well understanding that like one person, like it's in the small actions every day.
Yes.
And what's coming through for me is that you had mentioned that allies are primarily men, but it's really anyone who has any kind of privilege. Can you talk more about that? Because in listening to you talk about, being an advocate, being a disruptor, being a sponsor, that having some kind of privilege is almost a prerequisite there if you're going to stand up for someone. So how does privilege intersect with being an ally?
Yes. Yeah. And so you're absolutely right. Privilege, you have to have some privilege to stand up and act as an ally. And that privilege doesn't mean you're a white cis man, for example. Although in the tech industry where I really focus, that is definitely someone who has a lot of privilege. But if I look at myself, I also have a ton of privilege. And my privilege shows up in the workplace in terms of I'm highly educated. I have a great degree. I have been an executive at a well-known tech company. I'm a published author. I've given a TEDx talk. I'm in a stable marriage. I own a home. I mean, there's so many levels of privilege that allow me to take risks, and take risks being stepping out of my comfort zone potentially and advocating or pointing out where we need to be more inclusive. So that's my personal story about privilege, and probably the list goes on. I have money in the bank. I mean, there's so many things. I have my health. I mean, there's so many things that I could keep ticking off. But really, people, not that everyone has a lot of privilege, but I think that most people have a little bit, and that little bit of privilege can often be translated into that encourager, that standing that allows you to take some of these everyday actions.
Yeah. And so in terms of translating, I think what would be really helpful in terms of painting a picture that we can say, oh, wow, I can do that. That's actually not that hard. Mm-hmm. Can you think of some examples of using a specific kind of privilege and translating that into an action that's going to help
create
more inclusive workplaces?
Yes, definitely. So one, let's take meetings, because we spend so much of our time in meetings. One thing, and there's research that backs this up, women are interrupted more often than men in meetings. And I don't know why it happens. It could be that men have longer vocal cords, which make their voices deeper and more resonant, which allows them to be, you know, stronger and better at interrupting. It may be that we, just as a society and a culture, it's more acceptable for men to interrupt and less so for women. Or it may be that we women might use kind of qualifying phrases or fillers that allow it to open ourselves up to being interrupted. Mm. You know, the classic might be something like, well, you know, if you don't mind, I would like to make an additional point to what you just said. And we just like talk and seek permission before we even start talking, making our point. So, but regardless of the reason, there's research that shows that women get more interrupted more often than men. And if we unpack that, that means women aren't showing up and being as effective as they could in the meetings, because if they are interrupted, they don't get their point finished, or they pull back and stop participating as much in the next meeting because they're like, it's just not worth it. I'm just going to get interrupted. Mm-hmm. So what is the way privilege shows up is someone, and this is a very simple gendered thing, but someone who is in the majority in that meeting, like a man, might notice this interruption and just say, hey, hey Joe, excuse me, I want to hear Jen finish her thought. Okay, that's an example of an everyday action. Using your privilege, Joe's not going to hate you for calling him out like that. It's a respectful way of calling someone out, and you get to redirect the conversation back to that underrepresented minority who's in the meeting, who really wants to make their point. Yeah. So there's an example. Does that help lay it out?
It does, yeah. And I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, and I'm also remembering times that I've been interrupted during meetings. But you know what? We're also remembering times when people have actually said that, you know what? Hey, let's Jen finish. And so that could lead to a little bit of discomfort though, right? My perspective, you know, say I was the one who was interrupted, I might feel like, oh, man, is this going to happen every time? Like, does another cis white male have to say, mm-hmm. let Jen finish, you know, every single time I do this? But I think, I don't know, like, I'm not quite sure what the question is, but how mm-hmm. might, maybe the question is, how might we make people feel, or help people to feel better about this, that that's actually a good thing, and that it's leading toward progress, and it's not like, oh, okay, I need to help you. You know what I mean? Like, that can feel...
So, I think what we're getting into is, let me back up. Getting into this idea or this concept of, are you a knight in shining armor riding in to save Jen from being interrupted?
Sure.
Or are you an ally who's potentially doing systemic changes that's going to change the culture? And I firmly believe, and I've heard from so many women, and I think this is what you're getting at, is I don't need a knight in shining
yes.
armor. I'm perfectly capable. And in fact, I will look weak if someone comes in and saves me every single time I need saving. And those savings are in air quotes, even though you can't see me doing that. And so what I like to use as a lens to look at potential ally actions through is, am I doing something to save just one person? Or is there something I can do to make a systemic change to the culture? So, for example, in this interruption thing, yeah, the example I gave is someone's just saving you, Jen, that one time.
Yeah.
Better would be to have potentially, like, let's talk about how we run our meetings and have people who have roles, roles such as, well, someone's going to take the notes and someone's going to keep time and someone else is going to look out for interruptions. And get some adoption of a new way of running meetings so that every meeting has this new awareness around we interruptions aren't cool. We're not going to allow those. And that to me is more of an ally, systemic ally action versus the knight action. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. And yes, that's exactly what emotional ping I was feeling there. It was like,
yeah,
you don't need to save me.
Express, right?
But
I get it.
But the systemic changes and the tip in there, which I love, is to have somebody looking out for interruptions, no matter who's interrupted, because everybody gets interrupted every once in a while, that to have somebody looking out for that. And it's not just that it's like, okay, make sure that the women always, or the minorities have a voice. It's everybody. Let's just make sure that everybody has a voice. And so rising tide raises all ships, kind of a thing.
And what you just said, and I want to just emphasize it, which is another ally action actually, is to repeat and give credit to someone. But Jen, what you just said was, the rising tide makes, all the ships rise together. And I think that is a critical part of my message around allyship is, yes, you're doing these things to help people who are underrepresented in your workforce, who face challenges that you don't as a person with privilege. Yet, by doing that, you make an environment and a culture where everyone can really thrive and do their best work. I talk to people where, even white cis males say, I don't like to be interrupted. Well, no kidding. It's not respectful and so forth.
Sure.
So that's just that one example, but that's a great example of if there's really a diminishing kind of aspect of your culture that's around interruption, isn't that awesome for everybody? So anyway, yes.
Yes, great example, because we do spend our time, like it or not, for better or for worse, we spend a lot of our time in meetings. And so changing meetings for the better in small ways and big ways and systemic ways is one of the really kind of 80% of the time we spend in our meetings, 80-20,
right,
that we can really make some change. Hi, everyone. We'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh, and you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to jenbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the 4 shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's jenbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview. So I'd love to hear some other tips or stories. And I know that you do have a book coming out, right?
Yeah.
And I know you share some of these tips and stories in your book. So I'd love to hear about, what that is. And if you can give us a little bit of a preview of what you share in there.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Can I tell you a little bit of the backstory on my book?
Sure.
Would that be okay to start there? And then I'll answer your question.
Absolutely.
So the backstory, and I just think it's I find it interesting, so I want to share it with your listeners too. So about 4 years ago, there was this infamous Male Allies panel at the Grace Hopper celebration. And for your listeners, I'm not sure how much everyone knows about that, but Grace Hopper is the largest conference for women in tech, women in computing. And 4 years ago, they decided to have male allies on stage talking about what they do to support gender diversity at their companies. And before the panel started, like weeks leading up to it, there was concern about this panel. There was concern that, hey, why are these men taking up valuable stage time at our women's conference? And by the way, are these men really that great at being allies, because their companies don't necessarily have great track records? So this does not feel good. And so there was a small group of women who decided to create a bingo card that would be filled with, and was filled with, all the phrases they expected these men to say that would show how far removed they were from really being true allies. And they handed out this bingo card at the start of the panel. as people were walking in, and then about halfway through the panel, somebody did yell bingo, because this bingo card really did, it was on the mark. It really did represent things that these men were talking about. And to their credit, they then decided, they realized what was going on. They had conversations, and the next day they held a reverse panel, which was, we are going to listen and all of you can talk and tell us about the challenges you face and educate us and help us understand how we can be allies. So there's a good outcome to it from that point of view. But that bingo card catalyzed me. It catalyzed me in a way. It's like, oh my gosh, these men that were on stage, and so many men like them, are actually good men. And they really want to be doing something, but they have no idea what they could be doing. Mm-hmm. They really, there was an invisible line in front of them that they were crossing over in that panel, and they just didn't even know that line was there. And so I felt almost badly for them that they were set up for failure. And I'm like, how can I help them? And so what I did is I partnered with another technologist, a female technologist, and we created the other bingo card, another bingo card being one that was more aspirational and affirmational of all the things we actually did want men to be saying if they were going to be allies for us. And this bingo card had things like, you know, I do salary reviews and fix inequities. I pledge to not speak on all male panels, you know, things like that. And what I decided after we wrote this bingo card, we then published it in an article on the Daily Beast. And then I decided, well, I really should create a Twitter handle to start broadcasting these phrases to get a little bit more, you know, awareness around it. I didn't want it just to fade away. So I started this Twitter handle called @BetterAllies in 2014. And for the next 4 years, I just kept tweeting different things. You know, I fix the salary inequities by gender. I pay attention to our hiring pipeline and look out for when people drop out of it. I do this, I do that, or I pledge to do this, I want to do this differently. And before, I wasn't really on purpose, but you can hear how I'm talking. I sound like a man, right? I'm sounding like the male ally, the perfect male ally out there. And so I kind of just embraced that and kept going with it. I embraced that I'm going to have this voice, primarily a male executive, a male leader in the tech industry who is becoming aware of the role of an ally. I'm reading a lot. I'm reading research from top leading sociologists on challenges that underrepresented people face in the workplace and in the industry. I'm reading popular articles. I'm just following different thought leaders on Twitter who are tweeting and posting about the inequities in our workplace. And I'm just gathering all this data. And for each time I read something, I'm thinking, what could I do? You know, reflecting on my 25 years working in tech as a leader, what could I do and take from this research, this post, this whatever, this story, this cautionary tale, what could I do and apply it without having to be that head of people, that head of diversity and inclusion at my company, right? So I kept finding these things that were like, I can do this. I will do this. I pledge to do this. And this summer, basically, after running this Twitter handle for almost 4 years at that point, I decided I just needed to write a book on what I've learned. And not have like all this great tweeting material just sort of fade into the Twitter twilight, as I like to say. I wanted to have a book that I brought it all together. And so my book is called Better Allies, Everyday Actions to Create More Inclusive, Engaging Workplaces. And it's coming out on January 14th, which I'm super excited about. So thank you for asking and letting me talk about the backstory. And my book, I have different chapters where I focus on different topics. So meetings is definitely one, but that's not the only one. I also talk about diversifying your network and why that's important to do. You know, our networks, not only do we tend to hire from our networks and recommend people from our networks for roles at our company, but we also tend to trust people we know. I mean, that's just a human nature. And so we tend to trust people who are in our network there, in our professional network. And the way that relates to the workplace then is, okay, if we trust people we know, then we're going to be trusting people and recommending them for more responsibility, for stretch assignments, for going on some cool customer visit, to attending a strategic discussion with some business unit leaders. We trust people we know, so we recommend them for those types of opportunities. Of course, if we are on any kind of position, any kind of position that we are going to be promoting people, we're going to promote people we trust and think that can do the job. And so if we have primarily people in our network who are basically who are homogenous to us, who are like us, because that's how we tend to do our networking. We tend to hang out with people we know and like and have something in common with. If our network is full of homogeneity, we are going to be opening all these doors to people who are homogenous as well and people who are like us. So super important to diversify your network. So that's another thing I talk about in some of these everyday actions are things like, well, I will introduce myself to someone who doesn't look like me at the next conference I go to or the next happy hour, company happy hour, or whatever it is. Like, just introduce yourself to someone who doesn't look like you. Start a conversation. Mm-hmm. So that, for example, is one of those. Other chapters I have are things about how we give feedback and how that differs between men and women and people of color, and how it's hard for us to give constructive feedback to people who are different from us in terms of race or gender, because we don't want people to think, if I give them tough feedback, are they going to think I'm doing this because I am sexist or racist? So we tend to hold back from giving constructive feedback to people who aren't like us. And of course, that's not fair, because growth happens when we get that constructive feedback. We learn what we need to be doing differently. That's going to be better for our careers and have a bigger business impact, right? So there's a whole chapter on getting feedback. There's a whole chapter on hiring and how to take bias out of the hiring process and create more inclusive hiring practices. And on and on and on. There's just, there's so much. I try to have it be comprehensive, providing some of the research that's out there, providing some anecdotal stories about my own self, my career, as well as clients, and then providing these everyday actions, which is a summary of each chapter at the end, is just a list of, and here are things you can do in that spirit of having an everyday action to take.
That's so wonderful. And I love the story, the backstory behind it. Is the Better Allies Twitter account, that's still active, right? Are you still doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a little addicted to it. So yes, it's active. I also have a newsletter that I call 5 Ally Actions. It comes out every Friday. And so that, because there's just so much more material that I am learning. I mean, I'm not the perfect ally. So I am on a journey myself trying to learn this. And I love sharing that through Twitter as well as through my newsletter. So it's very active. Yes.
Yeah. And I want to acknowledge you for saying that you're not the perfect ally. And that makes me feel more comfortable, because one of the things for myself, and I've felt this from other people as well, and you kind of touched on this as you were describing negative feedback, that people, I can raise my hand and say that I am one of them, are often very scared of saying the wrong thing, are scared of offending someone or asking the wrong question or saying something the wrong way, or heaven forbid someone accusing me of being racist or sexist or some other, some other way, when that wouldn't be my intent at all. I don't believe that I am those things, but by approaching it, I'm not the best ally. I'm not perfect, but please help, help me do this. So I'm wondering, and I love the daily actions, the everyday actions, because that's really how this happens. It's like every day, how can we stand up for others? How can we stand up for ourselves more? And one of the things that I'm curious about, because I've had experience with it, and I've encountered others who have needed help with this as well. So you had mentioned introducing yourself. So this is a great suggestion. Introducing yourself at the next networking event, at the next conference that I go to, I will introduce myself to someone who doesn't look like me. What would you say to someone who says, oh my God, that scares the living beep out of me? Either because like I'm maybe introverted, or just I don't even know how to do that. That's really stepping outside of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
What would you say to that person?
Yes. So I'm an introvert, so I can relate to that, even though introversion and extroversion is a whole scale of a spectrum. But I am definitely an introvert. So this is often putting myself outside of my comfort zone. So I get it. Here's my hack for this, because it's hard to introduce yourself to, and to even go to networking events at times if you're an introvert. My hack is always, I look for someone who's by themselves. I did this recently. I was at a reception after a conference talk, and I'm like, okay, I'm a better ally. I'm going to go introduce myself to someone who doesn't look like me. Mm-hmm. And this was a conference for women, so it was mostly women. But then I spied a woman of color, and I am white. So I spied a woman of color who had a plate of food and a beverage, and she was by herself at a table kind of in the corner. And I just walked over to her, and I said, hey, I'm Karen. I must admit, I always introduced myself to someone who's standing by themselves. Do you mind if I put my beverage down here and talk to you for a little bit? So I just kind of own it. And the reason it's a hack, first of all, it's easy to do, but the other person is going to be so receptive because they're standing there all by themselves and they're a little awkward, right? Yes. Network event. They don't have, so they're going to be like, woo, someone's coming over to exactly. talk to me. This is great. Right. So you're setting it all up for success. And then you don't, you know, you just let the conversation go from there. Ask them, you know, what do you do for a living? What did you come to the conference for? Whatever it is. I mean, yeah, have a little small talk to, like kind of in your back pocket that you can pull out to use here. But I bet hopefully that makes it a little bit easier and less intimidating if you approach against someone who's all by themselves.
Yeah. And I can,
and there's always somebody.
Yeah. There's always somebody. And I can appreciate that from both ends of it because I do that too. Not necessarily intentionally, but like now I can do it more intentionally now. Like, oh, look for the person who's alone. Cause that's from something that I will do. And I have been that person just sort of standing there. I actually just went to a networking event recently and there was a talk. And then after the talk, I wanted to go talk to one of the speakers, but of course I was far away and everybody was like going toward the speaker. I'm like, okay. Right. So then everybody had already kind of made their little groups and I feel like I'm standing there. Okay. Eating my shrimp. All right. So I just sort of walked around and I found somebody who was alone and I talked with them. And so I think that's great. The other, I also go toward the other end of it too. Cause if it's like, in other words, a large group, right. Sometimes that's easier mm-hmm. to infiltrate, for lack of a better word. Yeah. Like a group of two or three, they might have a really good thing going on. You may not be able to kind of insert yourself, although that's possible. But I'll look for like larger groups where it's just sort of like, hey, we're just all kind of hanging out and having fun. And then you can just sort of say, you know, like, hey, I'm Jen, or hey, I'm Karen. You know, what are you guys up yeah. to? That can help yeah. really well too.
Okay. Yeah. But so I'll just share with you too. Like, I get that. I think I've done that as well. But I can think of some networking events I've been to where there have been a lot of, oh my gosh, I'm going to say it, bros. There have been bros there.
Yeah.
And I'm middle-aged. I'll just say I'm a little older than most of these bros. And for me, it's really intimidating to go up to these bros who are having some good conversation and just like try to get their attention, try to make my way into the circle of people. It's yeah. really intimidating. But other environments might be less intimidating. So I think it gets back to the privilege and you know, how you feel you would be welcomed or not and how different you are from those people. So anyway, we could talk about that forever.
yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit, maybe it is a little bit more challenging because it does require, you know, you got to read the group versus, I've definitely experienced the bro thing as well. And, you know, you just sort of like stand around and like, I think maybe they're just going to ignore me. Okay, bye. and that's okay because, you know, we may have been in those situations before too, where it might've been a group of girls just really talking, really in the middle of it. And maybe somebody was just trying to insert themselves, but it wasn't, you know, wasn't helpful. So, or they weren't able to because we were just so in the middle of a conversation. So I respect that. And I understand that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a great one. Introducing yourself to someone who doesn't look like, you. What are some of the other, affirmations? What's another favorite one of yours where I will do this, I pledge to do this?
Yeah. I will pledge to write feedback of the same length when I'm giving performance feedback. Here's what happened. So Stanford's Clayman Institute, they did a study of thousands of performance reviews from like three large tech companies, as well as a professional services company. So these are the annual written performance evaluations. And they uncovered a lot of differences in gender, but one that is so simple is that women tended to get shorter reviews than men. And shorter reviews, of course, means there's less feedback about what they're doing well and they should continue doing, what skills they might need to learn, like technical skills or job specific skills that will allow them to have a better, bigger impact on the business. And of course, what do they need to change because it's not really working very well? The men got longer reviews. They got more of that feedback. The women got shorter reviews. So there's another simple everyday action. The next time I'm giving feedback, I'm going to do it in an equitable way. I'm going to make sure I'm giving an equal amount of feedback to everyone. And this can apply it whether you are a manager writing those annual reviews for your staff, or it could apply if you're just an individual contributor contributing 360 feedback to other people's reviews. Or if you have, if your company has like a kudos system or some way of acknowledging job well done kind of things, make sure that you are also writing equivalent length feedback. I gave this talk on my book recently at a big conference, and of course there was a big feedback kind of form afterwards to get rankings and feedback on all the speakers. And someone, it was so charming, someone in my talk left a piece of feedback of saying, I listen to you and I'm taking one action. I'm writing the same level of feedback to you as I just did to the male speaker I saw before you. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. And then went on to give me more feedback. But it's an everyday action once you are aware that that bias might come into play in how you give feedback.
Yeah. And that's very actionable too. The equivalent length feedback, it's very easy to score yourself on that, right? Oh, I wrote this long paragraph for this one person versus this person only got two sentences. All right, I'm gonna add that because this person deserves this feedback as well. This person deserves it because everybody needs to learn and grow, right? Like not
exactly.
It's not helping them to just say, "Oh, good job," you know.
Right.
So
exactly.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do now, Karen, is transition to the last question. And this is the question that I ask all of my podcast guests. What is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Yeah, so as a solopreneur, it is scaling. It's all about scaling. That's the biggest people-related challenge. I started out doing coaching, and coaching is very labor-intensive, I'll call it, because it is one-on-one. It is, there's only me, and there's only so much capacity I have personally. So when I was originally doing my coaching, I decided, well, I'm going to scale myself by doing group coaching. And so I started doing coaching for groups of 15 women at a time, which was, I love doing that. I love doing one-on-one coaching, but I'm like, okay, I'm scaling. And then, of course, I realized that's not quite enough. So I started doing a lot of speaking. And because speaking, you get to speak to hundreds of people at once, even though it's a little bit of a different touch point than the coaching. But still, it's like, okay, I'm scaling by speaking. Of course, and maybe that's not enough. So I scaled now by writing. And so that's why I've written two books so far. So scaling is definitely a big problem. The other thing I'll mention that I am facing as a solopreneur, and I think this is probably applicable to so many people, it's that age-old phrase, and I think it's a Marshall Goldsmith book title of, what got me here isn't going to get me there. So as a solopreneur, I need to keep evolving my business, my practices, the tools I use to help me be more efficient. And frankly, there's no one necessarily around me that I'm working with that I can brainstorm on how can I be more efficient? What tools are should I be using? So personally, I'm constantly trying to network and tap into people who have done this before or have just are a step ahead of me, for example, in writing a book or doing public promotional things around a book. What got me here isn't going to get me there. I constantly have to keep evolving. And frankly, it's tempting to just sort of like, okay, this is working, this is comfortable, I'll keep doing it, right? But we have to keep pushing ourselves. And I think as a solopreneur, you have to be disciplined about it because otherwise it's not going to happen. And as I think holistically too about this, what got us here isn't going to get you there. I really think that is my hope for companies and organizations and workplaces everywhere, that they realize that maybe they've been successful to date with a great product portfolio, a great service offering, that they're profitable, but that isn't what got them to that point isn't going to be what is going to help them remain competitive or grow their business going forward. Just if we just get the talent shortfall that is across the United States and probably in other places in the world too, but you know, there's not enough tech talent to fill all the positions. There's record unemployment rates right now in the States. And all of that means that it's hard to hire people. And certainly everybody you've already hired, you want to retain if they're the right people. So things that worked for us before in terms of hiring and retaining talent aren't going to be the things we need to do going forward. And I think being better allies and creating more inclusive workplaces is going to be one part of the key to unlocking that and making sure that companies and organizations and workplaces can retain their competitive edge going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Totally on board with you for that. And thank you for that quote too. I do like that. It's kind of thinking about almost unlearning what it is that I've learned, we've learned up to this point in order to break through to whatever that next level is going to be.
Right on. Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if you've thought about, like, for yourself as a solopreneur in your business, you had mentioned you had gone from one-on-one coaching to group and then to speaking and to writing so that you can scale and spread the word to wider and wider audiences. I'm wondering if you don't mind sharing or had thought about what's next for you? What's next for Karen Catlin Consulting?
I know. I have a good friend and someone I collaborate with a lot, Purnima Vijayashankar, and she's the founder of Femgineer, and she's a co-author in my first book, Present a Techie's Guide to Public Speaking. And she's always like, Karen, you need to do video. You need to do more video. You need a YouTube channel. You know? And oh my gosh, she knows every time she brings this up, she knows my response, like, nope, not going to do that. And the reason is because, like most people, I hate watching myself and listening to myself talk. And being on camera, what we're doing here, I'm very comfortable with. When I'm speaking in front of hundreds or thousands of people, I feel comfortable with, which is a little weird. But something about having that camera on me, I get a little awkward and everything. So I think I need to do that to scale more. And I need to just get comfortable with having that camera on me. I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but that should be the next.
That comes to mind. Yeah.
And do you have any other suggestions for me?
I do video, and I don't know. I guess it's because I love. I don't know why it is. I don't feel that way when I'm on video. So I was a professor in my former life. So speaking in front of people is something that I grew comfortable with, being doing public speaking, and also obviously the one-on-one and group stuff is very natural to me too, and I love it. And I don't know what it was. Like, somebody had said, "Hey, yeah, you do a Facebook Live." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool." And I did it, and it just kind of grew from there. I think it's one of those things where it's just swallow the frog. I don't know if I have a better advice than that. But I was just, one of the things that I say all the time is that if we want to grow and if we want to scale, it's about stretching the boundaries of our comfort zone. And so I love that you recognize, that's like, this is the thing that people who I trust are telling me, maybe I do this. I don't want to, but, it's on the other side of that's where the magic lies. There is magic.
Yes,
in this world.
I know. So Jen, what I will do is I will make a commitment that I will go back and look at your Facebook Live videos and recordings, and maybe that will be inspiring to me and just like kick me out of my comfort zone and start doing more of something around video. So thank you for that. I will look at them.
Cool. Yeah. It doesn't have to be perfect. I think, and I'm guilty of this as well, is that like we let perfection be the enemy of good enough, of just getting it done and getting it out the door. And once I got over that, it was for me seeing other people doing it, it was like, oh, they're just sitting in their living room and it doesn't have to be fancy, right? Of course you could do that. And just pretending there's an audience. And so that's what I do,
is. Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
That's cool. So we will look for that in the future. that's cool.
All right.
That's cool. And so to end on a note about talking about organizations, because I love that you brought that up in terms of thinking about organizations and how can organizations grow and how can we really think about hiring and retention in different ways. Just as a way of wrapping stuff up here, I'm wondering just in general what your general thoughts are on hiring and retention, particularly in the tech world, and what's to come there, or at least what you would like to see happen as an advocate for inclusive workplaces.
Yeah, oh my gosh. We have another hour right now. I'm kidding.
I kind of dropped a bomb there, but yeah. I wanted to kind of bring it, in an effort to kind of bring it full circle to what we were talking about.
I know. So at a high level, it is so hard to hire tech talent right now. And frankly, why wouldn't you want to cast as wide a net as possible? Cast a wider net than you have been before in terms of really thinking about the best employee is going to come with this degree, this pedigree, this work experience, even coming with a college education. Let's cast a wider net and think about how people might be able to do jobs when they have gone through a coding boot camp versus a four-year program, or that they have learned on the job versus having the official degree, for example. So casting a wider net means so many things, but that's like one tangible way of thinking about it. And to get to that point, and this is a best practice from my book, is simplify your job descriptions down to the real heart of what you need to hire for. With everything in a job description, and frankly, I've been there where I've written many job descriptions before where you just copy from the last one you wrote or someone else wrote and then you add to it. So these job descriptions can get pretty long. And for each thing, I think you need to ask yourself, if someone came along and didn't have this bullet item, whatever it is, would we still hire them if they had everything else? So would we still hire, like if it says a 3 to 5 years of work experience, required. If someone came with absolutely everything else we were looking for and only had 2 years or 1 year, would we consider them? If the answer is yes, then let's get rid of that requirement that they have 3 to 5 years of work experience, because it's not a requirement. Same with college education, same with technology stacks that you might want to be looking for. So by reducing the number of requirements, and there's research that shows this, you will attract a wider candidate pool. It's not lowering the bar. It is just acknowledging where you're already setting the bar and being very honest and transparent about really what you're looking for. So hopefully that's going to cast that wider net and allow you to be able to hire the talent that is going to help you create, the workforce that you need going forward.
Absolutely. Wonderful summary. Thank you for that. And I did hear that you said in your book, you talk more about this as well.
Yes.
Awesome. So anyone who's interested in hearing more about that or just anything around being a better advocate in the workplace, Karen's book is coming out, Better Allies, Everyday Actions to Create Inclusive, Engaging Workplaces. It's coming out in January. So by the time this is released, it should be out already. Can people find this on Amazon?
Yes, it will be on Amazon, and they can go to betterallies.com where there are links to buying it and more information about the book. And, of course, following me on Twitter and how to sign up for my newsletter if that's of interest. All of that's on betterallies.com.
Excellent. Awesome. So I highly encourage everyone to check all of that out, because really the way that we do this is by slowly but surely having more conversations. And that's what I love about what you're doing, Karen, is that you are encouraging people and helping people to have these conversations, which are sometimes uncomfortable, but at the end of the day, they are empowering and they are going to create better workplaces for everyone. So thank you for what you're doing. And thank you for talking today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And it is an honor to be sharing this with your audience and telling people about my book. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Karen.